you're listening to Andrew Horn's Rock Revival. I'm Andrew Horn, and this is the show where I talk about rock and metal albums, both classic and obscure, mainly from the 80s and 90s, but who knows what will turn up in this show. I used to write for Powerplay Rock and Metal magazine here in the UK, where I interviewed lots of rock stars for a very long time. It was 9 years I was doing that. Interviewed lots of rock stars, reviewed lots of albums and shows, and gave it up in 2016. However, I've missed it ever since then. So I thought I'd start doing this. Why not? I love talking about music, and I hope you share some of the pleasure of it with me as well. It's good to have you here, and I really do appreciate you listening. So on this episode, I'm going to talk about an album that was really important to me in the mid to late 90s. Wasn't at first, really. I didn't really like it when I first got it. It came out just before my 18th birthday, and to be honest, I hated it the first time I heard it. I don't think it was what I was expecting. Anyway, I'm getting a little ahead of myself here. So, Typo Negative. If you're not familiar with the name, I hope you are. If not, they're an American band formed in Brooklyn in the back end of the 80s, I think it was 89, by the one and only Peter Steele, the late Pete Steele, lead vocals and bass, with Kenny Hickey on guitar, Josh Silver on keyboards and backing vocals, and originally Sal Abruscato, sorry, I don't know how to pronounce that, I'm sorry, on drums, who did go on to be replaced by Johnny Kelly for what I think was the most popular incarnation of the band. Originally coming out of the hardcore scene, they formed Typo Negative with more of a gothic sound. And I think originally it was a lot more kitsch, and a lot more tongue-in-cheek. So they start off with things like Slow, Deep and Hard and The Origin of the Feces. Lovely titles, thank you very much. And they very much had their tongue rammed into their cheek. And why not? It was something different at the time. Gothic tinge music was popular with a lot of the alternative scene at the time. And gothic music with a sense of humour. Oh, they're onto a winner there. Especially when they brought out the album Bloody Kisses. So with that, it had huge scene hits in that, in the shape of Christian Woman and Black Number One. Those two songs, they sent Typo Negative into overdrive in terms of exposure, and the rest of the album, while not really, in my opinion, on a par with those two mega songs, it was a solid album, but it had quite a lot of strange humour. Humour that you may not really get if you're a first-time listener to Typo Negative and don't know quite how tongue-in-cheek they were. And some of it could be taken the wrong way, which was a shame because it was a very, very strong album. But yeah, it was kind of a sexy, gothic, metal, rock album with little overturns to things like The Munsters and The Addams Family, that sort of kitsch gothic, rather than the real serious goth scene stuff that was coming out at the time as well. However, with all the humour on there and the provocative lyrics, I think that sort of played against them, and it did make some people take the band the wrong way and assume they were this, that, or the other. So when they followed it up, Bloody Kisses with October Rust. And it's an album, as I said at the start, I didn't really like it at first. It really surprised me. It's an album of astonishing depth, and I don't just mean Pete Steele's voice. It's an incredibly produced album. It's a beautiful album to listen to, and it took me completely by surprise. When it came out, I'd got into the Bloody Kisses album, and I thought it was fantastic. Again, I didn't really get all of it, but tracks like the aforementioned Black Number One and Christian Woman were just incredible and really scratched an itch that I couldn't get scratched in other ways. That sounds wrong, but anyway, I was getting big into the goth scene at the time, just before October Rust came out. That's when I found Typo Negative through an ex-girlfriend. And when October Rust came out, I was surprised that when the first track finally kicks in, I'll get to that in a minute, when that first track does kick in, the first full song, Love You to Death, it sounded a little thin to me. It sounded a little weedy, because I was so used to the huge, chunky guitar sound of the previous album. When Love You to Death starts, there's piano, there's very romantic gothic lyrics and vocals, then you are washed over with this enormous wall of chorus and reverb and delay and just grandeur. It's grandiose, it's overblown, it's almost orchestral in the level of power that comes out of that song. But what I wanted was the straightforward tongue-in-cheek metal at that time. So I put the album aside a little bit. I came back to it a couple of months later. I'm like, let's give this another chance. Paid money for it. I'm gonna give it another go. And sat down. Possibly, I don't remember, but I probably had candles burning and some Nag Champa. If you're gonna wear gothic stuff and be goth in the 90s, you had to burn some Nag Champa, either in incense stick form or those little cones that I could never really get to light properly. Those are bloody awful, those things. But they smell fantastic. And even just mentioning the name Nag Champa now, I can smell it. I sat down with probably with a drink and some snacks and gazed out of my window in the forlorn teenage way that you do at the age and listened to October Rust by Typo Negative. And something had clicked between me hating it and when I gave it another chance, and I got it. At that point, that's when I really got it. I thought, oh, okay, no, I get this now. This is fitting into where I am and what I need right now. I was hugely into things like The Crow, The Craft, Lost Boys, and things like that at the time. And this seemed to fit in with that whole thing. There was elements of vampirism, there was very poetic, gothic poetry type lyrics going on here. There was the lush soundscapes brought on by so many layers of effects over the guitars and whatnot. And I got it then. This was an album where October Rust, I felt, were demonstrating how brilliant they were as songwriters and musicians. They'd done all the funny stuff with the previous album. On this one, they wanted to be taken a little more seriously, and unlike most albums at the time, it opened with a joke. Now, that sort of made me expect them to be very humorous throughout the whole thing. And while there are elements of humor in the album, it's not a major player this time round. So what it opens with is a track that's labeled as Bad Ground, which is 38 seconds of electronic buzzing, intended to make it sound like your stereo or your speakers or your headphones weren't working. So you're faffing about for 30 seconds trying to figure out what's going on, and then you're treated to the second track, Untitled, which is the guys laughing at you and laughing at their own joke and welcoming you to the album, thanking you for buying it. So that, all right, okay, so I'm on board with this. And then you were treated to Love You to Death, which is a 7 minute long masterpiece of mid-90s, overtly romantic and lushly produced gothic rock. That was followed by Be My Druidess, which was even more gothic. It reminded me, the guitars in Be My Druidess brought to mind things like The Mission and Fields of the Nephilim, rather than the hardcore tinged punky guitars, the metal-y guitars of what had come before. So following Be My Druidess, he gets into even more thoughtful gothic waters with Green Man. A very thoughtful, very sort of esoteric song. Bear in mind, this was at the time when a lot of people were discovering Wicca or Druidism and paganism and things like that. It was huge at the time, and a lot of people were discovering that. I read up on a lot of it at the time. I was fascinated by the subject, and it's that fit very well with the whole the scene that was going on there. There was a lot more of an understanding and appreciation for that sort of thing at the time. And Green Man fit really well. Again, that's 5 minutes 47 seconds. So far, the three songs so far were 7 minutes, 5 minutes 25, and 5 minutes 47. There aren't pop songs. Well, there's one proper pop song on this album. We'll get to that. After Green Man, there is one of the darkest, doomiest songs that had a real doom element to it, which was Red Water, Christmas Morning. And that is a haunting, haunting song. It's wonderful. It's cold. You get the festive elements, but you get this a festive feeling yet tinged with sadness and loss and longing. And that's quite a thing to achieve when you start a song with Christmas bells. Now, after that, 6 minutes 48 of Red Water Christmas Morning, which is just stunning. You are brought back to the more tongue-in-cheek type O Negative sound with the notorious, infamous, and very famous single, My Girlfriend's Girlfriend. If you've been to a goth club at any time since the mid-90s, I'm sure at some point you will have had a dance to My Girlfriend's Girlfriend while trying to pull goth girls. Hey, we've all been there. I just ended up marrying one, and that was fabulous. Best thing ever. So, My Girlfriend's Girlfriend, which is only 3 minutes 46, that's a proper pop song. It's structured as a pop song. It has a huge hook to it. And people picking up this album, thinking everything's going to be like My Girlfriend's Girlfriend, would no doubt have been very surprised with tracks like Red Water, Christmas Morning, or what follows My Girlfriend's Girlfriend, which is 7 minutes and 12. Again, another slow, dark, brooding masterpiece in Die With Me. You can tell the titles aren't particularly cheery. However, the songs were so lushly written and so beautifully realised through some interesting rhythms. There was interesting effects over the guitars. There was Pete Steele's bass, which is often distorted with like a fuzzy sort of gentle distortion to it. It's prominent throughout the entire album. It's almost used as a lead instrument instead of the guitar. The guitar is mostly used to complement the bass, and what lead playing there is on the album, what lead guitar playing there is on the album, is kind of subdued and very measured. And that's one of the things that makes it work so well for me. So with a lot of the early goth music, the things that came out of the Batcave scene, a lot of the guitar in that was quite restrained. Sometimes because it was intentionally restrained, and sometimes because the musicianship wasn't quite there. But it certainly was with Type O Negative, and they fit so much into these songs sonically that I felt it was impossible not to get lost in what they were producing. That's followed by Burnt Flowers Fallen, 6 minutes and 9. So again, not a short song at all. And that, while it didn't have the power of Die With Me or Red Water or Be My Druidess, it's a good track. It's a good track, but it feels a little samey after things like Die With Me and Red Water earlier on. Following that is In Praise of Bacchus, which is 7 minutes 36 and just so good. Okay, it's longer than Burnt Flowers Fallen, but it has such a majesty and grandeur to it, and a great sense of gothic theatre. And I think that's one of the things that really does stick out about this album, is there a great sense of theatre to it. That sort of lush, frilled theatre. And it's just wonderful. That's really not what the band looked like. They didn't dress like that. They were just dudes all in black jeans and boots and stuff. And they looked awesome, but it wasn't an overtly romantic image that they were putting forward. If you'll excuse Pete Steele's huge, lush hair. You thought I was going to say something else there, didn't you? I'm not covering that on this episode, I promise you. So, In Praise of Bacchus, after the huge gothic metal anthem that is, this huge, powerful anthem, you get Cinnamon Girl, the Neil Young song. So I guess that's pretty close to a straightforward pop song as well. That was released as a single, as were In Praise of Bacchus, Love You to Death, and of course My Girlfriend's Girlfriend. But Cinnamon Girl, it's one of those cases where I prefer that over the original. I've never really been a Neil Young fan. Sorry, I haven't. He just never really appealed to me. It may have been his voice, but with Pete Steele's voice on this, singing the whole refrain of it, and Type O Negative approaching it as one of their own songs rather than just a straightforward cover, it gives it a whole new spin, a new angle, makes it a lot darker, a lot more romantic, and way less scuzzy. Okay, so the shortest track follows this, which is it's some instrumentation and some chanted vocals, and it's only 1 minute and 7 long. And what I like about this is I believe that the title was intended to be longer than the track itself. So the 1 minute 7 little interlude track is entitled The Glorious Liberation of the People's Technocratic Republic of Finland by the Combined Forces of the United Territories of Europa. If you didn't catch all that, it's The Glorious Liberation of the People's Technocratic Republic of Vinland by the Combined Forces of the United Territories of Europa. And that, it is what it is. It's a little interlude track. It's nothing spectacular. However, that is followed by Wolf Moon, which I believe was to do with cunnilingus. Let's say cunnilingus on this show. During menstruation. What a subject to cover. I don't think there's another album that is covered on at all. I honestly can't think of one. I honestly can't think of another band that would approach anything like that either. But it is handled beautifully for such a subject matter. The Wolf Moon track, the full title is Wolf Moon, including Zoanthropic Paranoia. Sorry, Zoanthropic Paranoia is a gorgeous song. And it's so dark, and it really fits Candles and Nightchamber. Again, it really does. That's 6 minutes 37. Hugely memorable song. I believe that got quite a lot of play. I know it turned up on some magazine samplers that were going around at the time. God, remember when magazines had CDs on the front and not download codes? You know, I think that's a bit of a drawback with rock magazines now, where they give a download code, because basically you can just, you know, take a photo of the download code and download the CDs, the music at home that's been given away with these magazines. But I am biased because I love physical media. I still buy CDs. I love CDs. I love physical media. Not like that, but I do love physical media. So after Wolf Moon, anyway, the album comes to an end with its final song, Haunted. How could I not like that with a surname like this? And that is 10 minutes and 7, and it totally justifies the runtime. It encapsulates everything that's come before on the album, right from Love You to Death and Be My Druidess all the way up to Wolf Moon. It sort of brings everything together into one song. And really, Haunted is a really good example of the album as a whole. If you listen to it, the way it's structured, the chord progressions, the melodies that are in there, it does really surmise everything that has already happened throughout the previous 62 minutes. In total, this album is 72 minutes, 49 seconds long. Now, that is very good value for money. Granted, there are the little interludes and there's the little jokes, but it is a hugely good value album. It's ridiculously long and very good. There isn't a bad track on it. There's tracks that aren't quite as great as others. I think Burnt Flowers Fallen, thinking about it now, it is a stunning song, but on either side of it, there's Die With Me and In Praise of Bacchus, so it just seems to dip a little between those two tracks. I think it's all fabulous. And as Haunted ends, you are returned to the ending where the band thank you for listening and, you know, they say farewell. So I do like the fact that they sort of greet you with the joke and then they say goodbye at the end. Because if you have spent the entire runtime of this album just with the album and not listened to it piecemeal, you are going on an amazing journey with them. It's a great experience listening to the album as a whole. I do think the power of it is lessened by listening to individual tracks. Granted, you'll hear My Girlfriend's Girlfriend still to this day in some goth discos, but I would listen to the album as a whole entity. It feels like that's how it was intended. And to this day, it is a powerful album that is beautiful. I revisited it just before recording this, and it is a delight, and I want to listen to it again, to be honest. It's just so lush and luxurious. You know, it's like a Waitrose metal album. What a thing to say. But yes, I really appreciate this album. It was followed in 1999 by World Coming Down. And I think World Coming Down, that didn't work quite so well for me. It is seen as being like the darkest of their releases. There's talk of suicide on there and all kinds of things that are very unpleasant. But apart from songs like Everything Dies, Everyone I Love Is Dead, that's a powerful track, very powerful track. It's not on the same level as October Rust, in my opinion. I think with that album, Welcoming Down, they went a bit more back to like a back to basics sound, with sort of, if you can imagine it, the songwriting of October Rust, but the recording and production approach of what had come before with the second album, Bloody Kisses. I know it worked for a lot of people, and I'm not saying it's a bad album at all, but just after October Rust, it wasn't quite as spectacular as I'd hoped it would be. But that's just me. I know Welcoming Down is a hugely popular and appreciated album amongst the band's fans. I know the circumstances around the creation of the album were really unpleasant, following a series of sad deaths in Pete Seal's family. I think there was an intention to move away from the more sexual, carnal nature of what had come before. But personally, I do prefer October Rust. Well, sadly, as many people will be aware, Pete Steele, born January 4th, 1962, sadly passed away April 14th, 2010. And when Steele died of sepsis caused by diverticulitis, was initially reported as heart failure, he was only 48. I'm 43 now, and that's just a terrible, terrible thought. As a man that loved nature, he loved what he was doing, he loved to get his humour across to people and show his talent to the world. And just before he died, I understand he was starting to put some new music together. And after he passed away, the other members of Type O Negative they just couldn't carry on with the band. And I totally understand that, with someone as enigmatic as Pete Steele on vocals and bass, so very much the absolute centre point of the band, there was no way they could carry on. What he left behind, with albums like Bloody Kisses and Welcoming Down, and for me, mainly October Rust, he left behind a legacy that will live on for a very long time. There has never been a band like Type O Negative in terms of approach, their sense of humour, their talent, the whole package. It just came together in this wonderful, pitch dark, clove-scented delight. It was tongue-in-cheek, but it was very well done. It was extremely well realised. And for that, it was a great loss to the music world, I believe, when Pete Steele died, and again, when Type O Negative passed with him. But what a legacy to leave behind. And I think the only thing to do with that now is to go and revisit October Rust all over again. All 72 minutes of it. Why not? Thank you for listening to this episode of Andrew Horn's Rock Revival. This has been an episode all about the Type O Negative album, October Rust. If you've enjoyed this album, please do like and subscribe. The podcast is on a bunch of platforms, including YouTube, Google Music, Amazon Music, Audible, Spotify. It's all over the place. Please do check it out and subscribe so we can talk more about cool music. I've been Andrew Horn, and this has been my Rock Revival.